centrismo, eurocentrismo y comunismo, visiones alternativas sobre el pasado y el futuro. Es decir, de alguna manera vamos a resumir, vamos a concentrarnos en lo que vimos en las sesiones de la mañana y la tarde de ayer. El análisis del pasado y cómo se refleja en nuestro presente y nuestro futuro. Vamos a tener en la mañana de hoy 4 intervenciones de los compañeros que me acompañan aquí en la mesa. La primera intervención va a estar a cargo de Abdul Al-Kalimat. Tony Brook es además coordinador general del proyecto de recopilación y edición de las obras completas de Malcolm X, en el grupo de trabajo de Malcolm X. Abdul va a hacer una intervención cuyo título es Malcolm X y algunas consideraciones ideológicas en el grupo de trabajo de Malcolm X. Abdul va a hacer una intervención cuyo título es Malcolm X y algunas consideraciones ideológicas contemporáneas. Vamos a proceder, igual que en las sesiones de ayer, intervenciones de aproximadamente 15 minutos de parte de los ponentes, donde expresarán las ideas fundamentales de los trabajos que han preparado para el evento, y después haremos un receso tras el cual procederemos al debate de las ponencias presentadas. Entonces, le doy la palabra a Abdul.
Thank you. Comrades, brothers and sisters, friends, first, it's a pleasure to be here, and we express our gratitude and thanks to the sponsoring organizations and to the people of Cuba for this symposium. Malcolm X is the symbol of America's ideological crisis, an ideological crisis of race, nationality, and class. The main focus of my paper is to delineate a perspective on this current ideological crisis. And it's to call for the radical black tradition to be placed at the center of rebuilding the black liberation movement in the United States, and as such, to constitute a new attempt by African Americans to contribute to the project for the universal emancipation of humanity. The current ideological crisis of African American radicalism is not unrelated to the general ideological crises in the world today. There is a systemic ideological crisis of Eurocentrism, Afrocentrism, and communism. Each is a theory of world history, and each is a political project on a regional and/or global scale. Eurocentrism has dominated the globe for 500 years, whereby Western Europe has lied about humanity, imposed its capitalist system, and required worship of its culture from modes of thought to aesthetics and religion. This is a great and global burden for the world's people. Both Afrocentrism and communism oppose Eurocentrism. But, and this is a most crucial point, both have ended up replicating the Eurocentric lie, although in different form. Communism, as based on Marxism-Leninism, emerged in Europe and has been limited by its origins, the historical experience base of its analysis, and the social and cultural styles of its adherents. But as a universal project for humanity, even with these limitations, communism has been the fundamental threat to Eurocentrism. Afrocentrism is a particularity of resistance that defends black people by reasserting a primary role for blacks in world history and culture. This is its strength and its weakness. The general task is to defeat Eurocentrism by correcting communism with Afrocentrism, a dialectical transformation of both. The argument I'm presenting has 3 points. First, that there is a radical African-American tradition. Second, that Malcolm's greatest strength is his embodiment of this tradition. And third, revolutionary ideology can be advanced by grasping Malcolm's universal methods of thought. Malcolm expressed a tradition of black radicalism. This is important as it corrects the genius theory that robs black people of the collective historical nature of their ideology. Malcolm was a great person indeed, not only for his unique individual traits, but more so for his role as a conduit for a tradition of genius in the context of a great radical mass mobilization. Malcolm represented the convergence of four aspects of our radical African-American tradition. First, black religion. Malcolm embodied a radical morality, honest militant rhetoric, and a vision of the good life based on spiritual freedom and social justice. This has always empowered black people to know that they were morally superior to their oppressors, no matter what. Second, black nationalism. He was committed to the consolidation of community resources, the mobilization of the masses of oppressed and exploited black people, the bottom of the pile Negroes, as he used to call them, in the interest of self-determination. Third, Pan-Africanism. Malcolm understood that the struggle was an international struggle in which black people participated as part of the worldwide linkage of African people that extends to all corners of the globe. This linkage is bonded by culture from within and imposed by racist exploitation from outside. Malcolm reestablished Africa as the fundamental historical foundation for black identity in the consciousness of the black masses. In a world sense, his only peer, contemporary peer, would be Bob Marley for spreading this message, the great reggae poet philosopher. And finally, socialism. Malcolm was not a Marxist by textual reference, but he was anti-capitalist and open to dialogue and debate within and about the socialist experiments, especially in the Third World. He embraced radical thinking wherever he found it. He was grounded in this radical tradition in the first years of his life. He faced a profound American dialectic. First 15 years of his life, he grew up in small Midwestern industrial towns. It's important to recognize Malcolm was not born and socialized and reared in the Deep South, and therefore, in a most immediate sense, he did not experience the legacy of slavery. He, in fact, grew up in the historical experience of the post-rural tenancy legacy of slavery, and as such, was a child of the urban, industrial, working class environment. However, racism destroyed his family and destroyed his hope in the American dream. In the second stage of his life, and negated his connection to this tradition I was talking about. In the second stage of his life, he in fact did embrace America from the standpoint of its alter ego, criminal violence. In moving to Boston and New York, and after living with his half-sister Ella, he took to the street. In fact, he embraced every negative status symbol of the American experience. However, in prison, Malcolm was able to come in contact once again with the radical black tradition, not only in the form of a prison intellectual named Bimbi, but primarily in his connection to Elijah Muhammad and his conversion to Islam and the Nation of Islam. It is critical that this was a reunion with his family, as most of his brothers and sisters were part of the Nation of Islam as well. He became whole as a person, as a family member, as an organizational leader, and as a force in his community, feared by his enemy. But in the Nation of Islam, There was growing ideological development, tension between his ideological development and the necessary unity he saw with the movement at large. After he left the Nation of Islam, he expanded his contacts and explored the possibility of revolutionary politics. And I think, as indicated before, this actually occurred in the 2 years prior to his formally leaving the Nation of Islam increasingly. When Malcolm went to Nigeria, when Malcolm went to Mecca, these were symbolic stages in the expansion of his identity and his grasp of world politics. It was at this point that he took the international aspects of the radical black tradition as far as it went. He was in dialogue with his revolutionary peers. He rapped with Che and Fidel, the revolutionaries from Africa. In this sense, Malcolm's ultimate ideological legacy is that he places us within our tradition at the cutting edge on the world scene. To grasp this, it is necessary to grasp the methodological basis of his thought. Our task, therefore, in rebuilding the Black Liberation Movement is not to replicate what Malcolm X said 25 years ago, but to use how he thought to guide the replication of a new type revolutionary intellectual activist. There are several key aspects to his method that must be pointed out, and it is essential that one recognize the inherent universality of these points. First, critical and independent thought. He stressed that young people, each new generation of radical activists, had to forge their own perspective, had to distrust authority, and forge a rigorous, democratic, intellectual style. He said, and I quote, "One of the first things I think young people, especially nowadays, should learn is how to see for yourself and listen for yourself and think for yourself. Then you can come to an intelligent decision for yourself. We need only think about what's happening in Eastern Europe to see the importance of these words." Malcolm X dared to challenge the historical record. Therefore, the second methodological point is historical study as the search and to identify the source of truth. His approach was to read everything from a Eurocentric as well as an Afrocentric perspective, and all of the revolutionary material he could get his hands on. His position was clear. Of all our studies, history is best qualified to reward our research. And when you see that you've got problems, all you've got to do is to examine this historical method used all over the world by others who have problems similar to yours. Once you see how they got theirs straight, then you know how you can get yours straight. The third point is language study. Malcolm mastered several languages and wanted to grasp more. He mastered the vernacular rap style of the black ghetto hipster and expanded his vocabulary with his legendary prison reading of the dictionary. In the Nation of Islam, he mastered the discipline of formal language communication in written and spoken forms. He saw language as an access point to the world and the basis for a true internationalism. And I quote, "I love languages. I wish I were an accomplished linguist. I don't know anything more frustrating than to be around people talking something you can't understand, especially when they are people who look just like you. In Africa, I heard original mother tongues such as Hausa and Swahili being spoken. And there I was, standing like some little boy, waiting for someone to tell me what had been said. I will never forget how ignorant I felt." The fourth point, verification of and by facts. Malcolm lived by the dictum, "Seek truth from facts." This forced his ideological presuppositions to be held in check by the course of historical experience. In the black community, a trend of ideological leadership specializes in the art of rhetorical illusion based on philosophical idealism. Malcolm was aggressive in opting for a terrain of ideological and political struggle based on the clarity of ideas and the evidence presented in making one's argument. He was not an isolationist. He took our cause into mainstream discourse without deferring or distorting his attack. Fifth, and most important of all, action must be linked to theory. Theory must be linked to action. Malcolm was committed to not only understanding the world and all of the wrong and evil that has been done to black people, mostly by others, but also by themselves. He was committed to changing the world and making it a better place for everyone to live, not only for black people, but for everyone. Indeed, Malcolm was a supreme black crusader against the Eurocentric lie. First, as an isolationist, Afrocentrist zealot in the Nation of Islam, but fully developed as an anti-imperialist black nationalist warrior. He was a nationalist in his particularity, but his project was a universal project for humanity. My position, finally, is that Malcolm would have embraced the higher aspiration for a communist society from a black perspective. He would have accepted no European center of world revolution and no text of ideological dogma over the Quran. However, in the world, in American society, on social, economic, and political issues, he stood for freedom, justice, and equality firmly within the tradition of proletarian revolutionary fighters for national liberation. He would have continued to reject the neocolonial sellout, the reformist compromise. Malcolm lives through the recent theory and practice of such revolutionaries as Stephen Biko, Walter Rodney, and Maurice Bishop. Now, today in the United States, we have begun to see the reversal of a recent reformist euphoria over the promise of electoral gains within the Democratic Party. However, the masses of people are being forced to suffer in new, unprecedented ways, and this is forcing the youth to search for more militant leadership options. They are turning to the memory of Malcolm. The times are changing, comrades and friends. The spirit of Malcolm lives in our radical African-American tradition, and I propose these 5 points to be the basis for ideological unity, even among those who have come on this delegation, as the basis for continuing our ideological discourse toward higher levels of unity and struggle. The spirit of Malcolm lives, and on his shoulders, we can face the 21st century with confidence that victory will be ours. Viva Malcolm, viva Mandela, viva Fidel, revolution is possible.